You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Lamar, it's so good to have you, man.
Really good to be here.
You came a long way for this.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate it. I've wanted to meet you for a long time. You've exceeded my expectations.
It's been a pleasure. I'm really thankful.
What's your biggest takeaway so far from the retreat?
I'm going to say vulnerability. That's the biggest thing, just because we walk around in ourselves and we kind of not necessarily like put on an act, but we have personas. Mm-hmm. That we're walking around with, and then being around a whole bunch of guys that are top notch, and they also have, I'll say, insecurities that they're able to work on and work through.
That's a good point. We've all been very candid, very vulnerable, but it's helpful. You throw out all your problems and you got 9 guys to help you with a solution.
Absolutely.
And this is a no judgment zone, and it's not like you're going to see any of them again, more than likely. I mean, hopefully we do, but
it's been supportive too. Everyone kind of acknowledging everyone in their plight or in their journey. So, it's been really healthy.
Is there something you've heard that's going to resonate with you for a long time?
Honestly, just say like the vibe, the millennial way, the vibe of everybody coming together, spending time together, acknowledging, you know, each other in their own way. Just that vulnerability that we always walk around kind of not showing. So I think that's what I'll keep in mind. That's what I've journaled about and like thought to myself about as well.
What'd you think of that hike this morning?
It was good. Yeah. I'm really thankful. Yeah. Really beautiful. Caught some nature at the end and yeah, loved it.
There's something energizing about walking through nature. You know, I live in Houston. It's a big concrete city. I'd have to go a long way to get a good hike in. It's all flat. We have some hills, what we call the hill country in Texas, but it's probably a 2.5-hour drive, I guess. You probably have a million places to hike where you live, huh?
100%. I think we have like 55 within a 20-mile range.
Jeez.
And then they're building this interconnected levee, I guess, or bike path that's supposed to connect almost near Portland all the way to the Dalles, which is about a 40-mile trek.
So you're from Pendleton, is that right?
Pendleton, Oregon.
And how far is that from Portland?
About 3 hours, 3.5.
Dang. So you just, when you feel like you need some weirdness, you go into Portland?
Absolutely.
Is it weird? I've never been.
It's recovering. I will say we went through a period. And now we're coming out a little bit more stable. I call it like a bleeding heart city. So,
yeah,
you know, they get into things, they bleed for a little bit and then rescind back to their homes.
If Antifa's not there making them bleed, huh?
Exactly. You know, that was something else those times, but definitely passed. A lot of cleanup has happened, real health in nature. And then going back to the nature part of it, we have such a green, beautiful city. So it's really good.
So you're 3.5 hours from Portland. How far are you from the next major city, say Seattle?
Seattle, about 3.5, 4.
Oh, so you're right in between them?
Not from Pendleton. Pendleton's 5 hours to Seattle.
So which sports teams do you root for?
I'll be honest, people are kind of catching up inside and I don't really have teams anymore. I was kind of wondering about what I intake, and because I'm like, I don't watch sports anymore. I hardly watch movies. I do a lot of YouTube, but to answer the question, I don't really have a team. Like I like players. I like people's like mentalities. I like some of the things they do. Pretty much I like for personality and then like persona is what they portray. But I honestly haven't watched forever. I've had free tickets. I've had things. I'm like, yeah, I'm cool.
I watch less sports as I get older, I find. Part of that is having a kid. She wants to watch a Blippi and I want to watch the Supersonics. And well, they don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Were you sad when they moved?
They were good. That's when basketball was good.
Sean's camp?
Yeah. I used to watch him tune in. They were competing every day. That's the difference.
You mean the NBA, and now they just shoot threes? Is that what you mean?
It's competitive in their own way, but I don't think the entertain. It's almost like it's like a wrestling, or I'd rather watch the Globetrotters now. You know, they're dunking and stuff, and it's like, okay, if it's just entertainment, you're not competitive.
It's funny you say that. At the airport on the way here, there was a guy dressed in Savannah Bananas garb.
Mm.
And Sunday on 60 Minutes of Propaganda, they had a segment about the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
And they're like the equivalent for the Globetrotters, but in baseball. And I had never heard of them, but it looks like a lively scene.
Yeah, definitely entertainment-based sports and kind of combining that. But I look at them from a marketing aspect and they're killing it from that point.
I would say you have the most interesting background of anybody here. Tell me a little bit about where you're from, where you live, and what that's like. And I'd really like to get your perspective on maybe how that's evolved over time.
Definitely. Born and raised at the Umatilla Indian Reservation.
How do you say it?
Umatilla Indian Reservation, Northeast Oregon, from like the Blues to the Basin of the hills. Hills to the River is basically what that is. The background to that is our reservation, which is intacted through treaty rights. And when you have a treaty rights, technically we're supposed to be a sovereign nation, but we don't enact any of those things. We pretty much follow the Constitution of America. And then from there, kind of transitioning into modern economy, we're just now starting to enact like some of our sovereignty, but it's been 150 years of not really much things. We're pretty much just trying to withhold the culture that we have, the rights that we have, and now we're starting to like leak into other aspects of life and modern economy.
So do its origins go back 150 years? Why'd you use that time frame?
The treaty's 150 years old. But the origins, where we've been in the region for 10,000 years plus, it was probably in like 2010, I want to say, they found a man called Kamiokan Man after he was, I don't know what it's called, when you get your grave
excavated
up. He was given back to our tribe and then reburied in an undisclosed location. But it's proof of life 10,000 years ago in the river basin.
Dang. Was he celebrated?
He was really argued over because like the Smithsonian and the major museums wanted to like study him and do different like DNA tests and such. So we were just like, it's against our culture, it's against our way to have people above ground that aren't supposed to be there. So like, let him rest pretty much.
Interesting. So I'd want to know if I was a descendant of this fellow.
No, 100%. They did get their time. So basically when they were arguing and debating, he was above ground for 6 months to a year about. And within that time, you know, he got bone shavings and height and weight. He was only like 5'5". So hopefully, definitely past that. I'm 6'2". So
you think everybody's like that back then?
100%. I mean, there's a lot of genetics that say, you know, we've grown for different reasons. One of these reels I just listened to was saying like, I forgot what tribe in Africa, but they're all like 7 foot. And then the other tribe just like 50 miles away is like all 5 foot. So the genetics come from place and that's what's translated or passed on through generations.
Yeah, there have been a lot of tall people that have come from there, like Manute Bol.
Yeah.
He's the tallest player ever in the NBA. He was like 7'6". And then Mutombo is from the Congo.
Yeah.
He died recently. I used to see him at my gym and look up to him. He's done a lot of good in the world.
Good heart.
Yeah. I think he died of cancer, if I remember right, just a couple years ago. It's really sad. I always think about that finger wag that Jordan gave him when he dunked on him. Remember that?
Oh.
That's a poster I want.
That's
put it on my wall right now. My wife might not like it, but that's why I need a man cave, I guess.
I was about to say, you got your man cave. You got to put it in there and get your space.
I'll go back to your heritage and origins, but since we're talking about that, at what age would you get married if you had to choose?
Honestly, we've had a lot of discussions about it, but like I have like a lover's heart. Like I literally thought I was going to be married at like 18, like white picket fence, just full-fledged. But to answer the question and going
by the way,
on...
me too.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
Going on in life, you know, I think 35 to 38 range is super healthy. You're more mature. You have your life going, or you should have your life going. And basically from there, make a mature, responsible decision about who your partner is. I mean, it's the biggest choice in life.
And you do have things going for you. It sounds like your business has grown tremendously since we first started talking, which how long we've been working together? 2 years?
This is about, 2.5 years, 2 years right in that
range. Nice. To what do you most attribute the growth of your business? And tell me what you do, because I find it fascinating.
Columbia River commercial fishermen. So it's through our treaty rights, actually. Basically, we drift fish from, there's a spring season and a fall season. But from that, I run farmers markets throughout the Portland area.
No shit. And how'd you get into that?
There's two ways. So I'm half Black, half Native. It's culture on one side, and then it's just like family function and just all fishermen on the other side. So when I was young, I was fishing with my uncles, and that's when like I kind of fell in love with it. Didn't necessarily have a dad in my life. So like seeing other men and act in those ways and provide and just have a somewhat semblance of healthy relationships going on. There is healthy relationships in that, but fishing was the medium in which we did things. So that was my Black side. And then on my Native side, it's cultural. So when you get your first fish, you give it away. it's really traditional. We use like a 10, 12 foot pole, which is like a hook on it, which would be called like spearing nowadays, but we call it gaffing. And yeah, ever since I've been young, always did it, always loved it. Always love, you know, just being out in nature and taking care of things.
What's your best day ever on the water? Like the most memorable experience you've had fishing?
So many. I love the water. We went the other day and just even being on the water, I feel like a baby. So always thankful for that. But speaking of my uncles in life, we were fishing the Walla Walla River, which is near back home. And he was like on this edge, this little slick. And there was a snake that got in between us, came down to the water to like get a drink or something. And he was like trying to hit it with the pole. And he slipped in and he just was like, boy. And I was just sitting there laughing, like not, you know, just amused by the whole situation. There's just so many.
You had to save him?
No, he was fine, but he just fell in, just splashing around, like
scared. Wow.
Yeah, and the snake's still by him, so he's mad. And I'm like 10, just laughing at him, so I'm no help. So there's so many. I just love the water.
That's fascinating. And you target salmon, correct?
Yeah, mostly all salmon in our fishery. We do have a sturgeon fishery, but it's super rare, and it's during winter, so I don't fuck with it.
Do you get tired of eating salmon?
I eat so much sockeye salmon and spring salmon. Those are our highest quality fish.
Is that the highest quality salmon?
I always say like Chinook is king, but sockeye is my favorite. And the highest quality fish is wild caught fish, fresh as possible, and packaged with care, of course. But everyone loves Chinook salmon, it's king salmon, and that's kind of its own brand.
When I'm shopping at Costco, isn't there an organic salmon choice? I want to say no.
No, organic would be wild.
Wild caught and then...
sockeye, probably.
Okay.
So yeah, most of the... sockeye is pretty much the only run in the world that can be, or at least in the Americas, that can be commercialized to get all across America in Costco's. And then there's obviously, of course, farm fish, which sustain the demand throughout, but wild caught, fresh as possible fish.
Could you ever get into Costco? Is that...
No, we're a mid-major. I like to think of your mid-major college near you. I think about Gonzaga. So we can't serve everyone, but we can serve the right people that want to be around us.
Interesting. All right, going back to your heritage. So you're half Black, half Native. Which side is Native?
The Umatilla tribe.
Oh, I'm sorry, which side of your family?
My mom's side.
Your mom's Native. Yeah. Are there disadvantages to that? Being half?
In some aspects, so we mentioned dating a little bit. This is just a personal thing, but you get privileges and, how do I say, privileges and benefits from being Native. Like, we get healthcare, we get a college education, there's dividends paid out, then there's my industry that I'm in. It comes through my tribal rights, even though I can do it commercially through Oregon, it'd just be a lot harder. Anyhow, so like, there's kind of like a selection process. Like, the more Native you are, in people's minds, the more benefits you'll get. They're all the same, but just saying, like, if you have kids, they'll also get it. So,
but they don't if you're half?
My kids, unfortunately, if I have kids with outside of the tribe, my kids will be like 1% under. So they'll be 24%. And within that 24%, they're not enrolled.
Whoa. So are you targeting
Native women? Yeah, I've been blessed in some ways and I've had other experiences as well, but I won't choose my love on that anymore. I made that mistake in the past and it was just dumb. I won't say I regret it. I'm thankful for the lesson, but it's so dumb. Like, I can make my own money to take care of everything anyway. So I don't need to be like, oh, I need all these benefits, but it is part of like my soul, my heritage, my culture, my identity too. So like, not having those things, it's a personal choice. And then I'm not going to stake my love on it anymore.
How much are we talking? Is it enough to live on?
No, but there's just the subsidies you get, like tribal housing, the healthcare, all those kind of things. It's a self-reinforcing system.
Oh, so it's not a monetary benefit?
You do get money, but like not. There's tribes in Americas that get like, there's one tribe that gets like I'm not going to speak on them, but like there's one tribe up in the Northwest that get like $5,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's livable, but they're in Seattle area. So like, it's kind of like bare minimum, if you would say.
Sorry, do they get $5,000 on top of housing and healthcare?
Yeah, so that's all intact.
Do they work?
I can't speak for them specifically. There's people that like break out, and I'll even talk about like my experience here. Like, sometimes I kind of like get to myself. I'm like, wow, like it's fucking crazy I'm here. But in some aspects, yeah, there's, as with everything, there's levels to things. Some people make it out, some people don't. And it's just their own life experiences. But there is a underlying systematic toxic relationship within the reservations, typically through generational trauma and other things.
And you say crazy you're here because most people don't leave the area?
Oh, not at all. Like, the number of people with passports in my tribe is probably, there's 3,000 of us. I bet less than 300 have, and even 300's high. Like, I'd bet less than 100 do.
Let's say you married a Native girl and you moved to Seattle. Would you be foregoing your benefits?
No, I can come down and fish. So even my time right here, I'm very thankful to be here. But I plan to be 6 months in the country, 6 months out of the country, and still always enact my benefits, or not my benefits, my rights, and be able to fish. And where I'm at now is home. So I don't really ever plan to be anywhere else during fishing season, of course.
Yeah. And you started that last year, right? Didn't you go to Bali? And
yeah, Bali, the Philippines, been to Argentina for a few months, but I like extended stay travel.
Me too. Tell me about, what was your favorite place that you went out of the ones you just mentioned?
Bali really took my heart out there. It was super spiritual, super beautiful. Just the kind people. Quick story was, I thought it was like a shrine house, like a kind of like a museum, to say the least. But I walked into somebody's house and I was looking at the shrines, looking at all of the just decor and everything. He's like, "Hey, how are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm good. How are you?" Just kind of like, you know, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. He's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm just looking at the shrines." He's like, "Oh, this is my house." And I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And like, started stepping the other way. He's like, "Oh, stay." And he welcomed me. He's like, "Oh, this means this. And, you know, this is this in our culture." And he talked about, it's not Buddhism, but the other one. Forgive me, but he talked about his spiritual
Hindu.
Way. Hindu. Yeah, Hindu. He talked about his spiritual way and some of the aspects that they intact and they are welcoming to outsiders, outcomers. And I was like, wow, that, like, in America, this would never fucking happen. It was really beautiful there, just humble. I do like affordability still growing my wealth. So it was super affordable for me. Yeah, definitely top on my list. And second was Argentina.
Sorry, I want to talk about Bali more. So you flew into Denpasar.
Yep.
You go to Uluwatu?
Uluwatu. And then the other place, I was spearfishing out there. So I learned to spearfish.
Nice.
And I was definitely at Uluwatu. And then the other one I forgot, but just beautiful water. I was swimming with sea turtles and eels and just a rainbow color of fish. I was like, what the hell is this? And it was just amazing.
Did you make it to Ubud? Ubud's in the
center. Yeah. You recommended me that. And the first day I thought you were crazy. I was like, man, there's just a whole bunch of tourists here. Like, what the hell's going on? And then I hung out there another time and then like the setting set in. They're really into yoga out there and the spirituality part of it. So the second time I went out, I was like, oh, like, ah, now I see what he means. And it was just kind of serene.
Serene is the word I was thinking. You think I'd be all right taking my daughter there who's 4?
Oh, absolutely. 100% safety, like just that story about the guy allowing me into his house. I never felt anywhere out of place. Sometimes being half black or, you know, tall or whatever, people look at you weird.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care there at all. Like,
yeah, it's probably just because you're ugly. It's not a race thing.
You maybe, but Argentina, they act like they never seen nobody before. So, but anyhow, no, it's completely probably the safest place I've ever felt outside the country. Like everywhere else, I've been to a lot of safe places, but like I felt kind of homely there.
You know, one of my favorite things to do is rent a scooter in places like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see families of 5, like especially in the Philippines, you see families of 5 all the time on one scooter.
Wild.
And I think I would never do that. But then if I took my daughter to Bali, I'd have to rent a car, I guess. I mean, I don't
terrible.
Can't put her on a scooter. I don't care how old she is. What do you think?
You're going to be in an hour and a half of traffic going
That's true.
Half a mile. So yeah, I do understand your point though. It would be crazy. But yeah, I think I've seen 4 on one scooter.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do you do that? It's like, but it's their own thing and it beats traffic.
Yeah, but so do helicopters. And
that's
true. I bet you Kobe wouldn't get in one today. R.I.P.
R.I.P. the great.
He was the last guest we had, favorite player. And of course, he didn't grow up with Jordan, so I think he's crazy. What's your take? Who's your guy? Who's the GOAT?
Jordan.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty simple for that. But I think Kobe is the closest embodiment of him that we'll probably almost ever have again. At least, I don't know. I'm not like, that's why I'm saying I like players. Like, I like look at their spirit and I'm like, nobody's doing that. It's more about the fame and dumb shit now. So they were competitors. They were like warriors.
I remember Jordan being asked who would he not want to play one-on-one. And he said, Kobe, because he's stolen all my moves.
That's fair. Greatness copies greatness.
Yeah, and he thought he was going to be the greatest player ever. But how can you say that when you're just copying somebody else's moves? I don't know.
Is that imitation is the best form of flattery?
He's surely flattered him, that's for sure.
So, but yeah, that's kind of going into that question earlier that I missed, was just saying, like, I don't care for anybody really in the NBA, how they play. Well, Luka's good. It's a different evolving thing. They're evolving, but they're not competitive anymore. They're not going at each other to, like, I don't expect them to fight, but like protecting their name, protecting their respect on those kind of things. Like, I don't see that competitiveness anymore.
Yeah, we need guys like Rodman or Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah.
Guys like that.
Play a little dirty, but with class. Just know at the end of the day, you're just trying to win.
Yeah. All right, going back to your native heritage, are you knowledgeable about all of the origins and like the Europeans coming over? And
we're definitely familiar. Kind of intertwines in our story. Like, so most of U.S. history, you're kind of just painted over. But on the backside of that story, there's always somebody else's story. So ours is through a colonization sphere, then through Oregon Territory, there's the reservations and making of reservations. So yeah, it's all intertwined.
So how does that happen? Like, how did it go down? Like, all of a sudden they were like, hey, we're going to form this country and put you guys over here. And
I've read the history of it. I know exactly where it is. I'm not 100% an expert. I mean, there's always war throughout history. And even within my tribe, this is a kind of unknown fact. We had indentured servants. So when you went to war, as everyone did in cultures, the losers, you would take them and make them your slaves. And so it's part of history throughout all of it. But coming in as that, it's a technology thing. And then we weren't used to European diseases. So there was just huge, what I'm going to say, genocide of just from disease alone. So say hypothetically, there's 200 million natives on the plains and everywhere throughout the United States.
Is that an accurate estimate?
No, I'm just saying hypothetically. I think it was like 40.
40 million?
Yeah, 40 million.
That's a lot.
But, you know, got decimated just through disease alone. So when they were coming west over to Oregon, we're on the west side, there might have been already down to 5 million. So half the people were gone. Kind of thing. Then by the time they reached Oregon, we're kind of in a blessed place. We had already had trade talk. We had natural trade routes. And so we had already interacted with the plains. They were already getting, you know, put on reservations. And so by the time they were there, like, we already had seen, like, it's a one-sided negotiation. So we actually negotiated really well, technically, before the treaties changed.
And how long ago are we talking?
1855 was the most of all treaties were enacted during the middle of the 18th century.
So do y'all celebrate American holidays?
Yeah, 100%. Most of us don't have any
ill will.
Like, I'm proud to be American. I'm very happy to have the opportunities that are afforded me. But and that's by taking advantage of what the opportunities are there. But technically, within our even treaty, we're supposed to be a sovereign nation, which we're not fulfilling. And within that, there's a whole bunch of other opportunities that could be available to us.
So there are some who are resentful?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's about land and culture and being on the losing end of it. Not many people are happy. I mean, there's always that thing, but I'll just kind of lead. You have to lead with forgiveness. And then when you study history, America's a beautiful country. You absolutely love it. But the fact is like, you just look at what happened during those times, like the Industrial Revolution, you know, splitting up from England in a sense, and then coming into this age of technology and the Industrial Revolution again. That's why we have the American Empire that we do. So it's great timing as well.
So if you were a total sovereign nation and you struck gold everywhere or something, or you struck oil and you got uber duper wealthy and were able to equip yourselves, do you think just due to human nature and the way that history's progressed, do you think there would be a revolt against America?
Probably. No, the numbers aren't there.
No, but if they were.
If the numbers were there?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, trade is the new economy. So you'd be stupid to cause war or go into any of those aspects of that lifestyle.
That's how I think about the world. Like, we're so prosperous, and that's what keeps people from warring.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's why Trump suggests to Kim Jong-un to build a tower, you know, to build condos along their beaches and try to make them wealthy and happy, and then therefore they won't want to use a nuclear weapon.
No, 100%. Trade prospers all, floats all boats. So that's the new economy, and anybody that would enact that or have that in mind, you're just going to be on the losing end. And then even if you're not on the losing end, there's so much organizations and all these different things that are in place that's like, okay, you're who you're going up against. But a little snippet going back to the actual traditions of it, within our treaties, we can still war against other tribes, technically. Obviously, we don't enact it, but we could.
And maybe should, you're thinking sometimes?
Yeah. they know their play desk.
Well, do you think America would come in and intervene?
It was supposed to be like that, basically.
Really?
Yeah.
When's the last war?
For Native versus Native?
Yeah.
I mean, there were warring parties all the time. So it was, you got your merit in life and went to manhood when you became a warrior.
Wow. So and how long ago was that? You think it stopped?
About the 150 year mark. So we were put on reservations. Our reservation was huge. It was pretty much half of Eastern Oregon. And then basically you were still living a traditional life. But then slowly as the Oregon Trail came over and people on those things, the land tracks started to get up. People started, when you were Manifest Destiny, basically you just put up a fence and then that was your property with title. And then that's what caused problems. So once you got all these fences everywhere, I mean, that was then. On the back half, being a Native, we don't understand law. We didn't understand those titles and stuff like that. So we were like, what is this? And yeah, that's when we kind of got condensed into our reservation bound now.
Is there an actual border on your reservation?
Border as in?
Like how do you know where it stops and starts?
It's just kind of like the welcome to Texas sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
What about schooling? What was that like coming up? Did you go to school with all Natives?
No, I didn't. So we do the Pendleton Public Schools. And they're pretty much one of those schools is in some ways dedicated to us because all the kids from the reservation go there in elementary. Middle school is all one place. It's called the Banana School. And then when I was in high school or right before high school, they did a charter school called Nikiawe. And it's been, at the time we were doing it, it was kind of education and just not all the way there, but now it's prospering and it's really beautiful to see. And they're saying like, 95% of Native kids from middle school are going to the tribal high school. So, and flourishing in a lot of aspects.
And then what about college?
Colleges, Native colleges or just colleges in general?
Well, how did you think about college? Was it a guarantee you were going to go or?
No, my story, I mean, I was aiming to be a collegiate athlete 100%. And that was pretty much my only carrot that I had in the game. Unfortunately, now I'm seeing education as like everything I do. But definitely not a guarantee. We had funds to do it. But like, for instance, I went down to San Diego State and I don't know the numbers anymore, but say it's $30,000 a year. I had like 15. So I was drawing on student loans and all these different things. So it doesn't take care of you in full. But now with a couple different scholarships, the kids from our reservation are doing, they have a full ride scholarship to Oregon schools. So tuition, everything. And then, even some like housing costs. And I was like, damn, that's me thinking about going back to school, but pretty occupied with business.
I dreamt about going to San Diego State. What was that like?
It was beautiful. San Diego's a haven. I don't like, I just have a frugal mindset in some aspects. Like I'm trying to keep as much as I can for myself. I love it. Like everything down there is beautiful, perfect weather, close to Mexico. Food's great. Everything was good. And the school itself, it's kind of known as a party school. But it was great, like great experience.
I think they're all known as party schools.
Yeah.
Unless you go to BYU.
That's true. That's facts. But they even kind of wild out.
Did you finish there or how many years?
I actually kind of dropped out. And then that's when I found fishing.
Did you drop out for fishing or did it get too expensive or what?
I'll be honest, I was swirling in life. After I kind of didn't get my basketball scholarship that kept me like kind of straight edge and going, like I just fell out and was kind of a loser for a few years. Started experimenting with, I never drank until I was like 21. Didn't do smoke, anything else until I was like 22, 23.
Why?
And just because I knew the aspects of life that could have happened, like my environment wasn't healthy at all to be.
So you had seen a lot of drugs and alcohol growing
up? Yeah, 100%. It's definitely a res life in that aspect. But
Res is short for reservation. I didn't know that until I met you. You talk about the res, and I'm like, is he talking about Riz? Because he taught me that word too. We used to call it Mackin.
Yeah, the res life. Definitely that environment's part of it. It's getting better a lot, but it's definitely part of it. That's why I didn't partake in anything.
And what's the population roughly?
There's 3,000 total, but there's probably only like 1,800 on the res.
And you know everybody?
You kind of do know everybody. It's like a one person town, meaning like if you don't know them, that person knows them. So you connected us all here. You're that one person in between me and all these other people here today. But the res specifically, yeah, you definitely know everybody's faces.
So you're spending a week here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going, you spent some time in San Jose?
Just 2 days.
Was that all right? Because I've never really spent a lot of time in San Jose. I use it as the airport.
That's what you should use it for.
Really?
Yeah, there's not too much things there, in my opinion. I'd rather get out here to nature.
You guys have a casino on the res?
Yeah, Wild Horse Casino.
Yeah?
Yeah, good things.
How do natives always get casinos?
We had traditional gambling games. So if you ever did any U.S. history, but specifically like Northwest histories, and then again, one tier down, Lewis and Clark, they were just basically documenting all the different tribes' activities and what they did and cultural aspects. And then obviously trying to find the West Coast too. But when they came to us, you know, they wrote actually very highly well, probably why we had such good treaty rights. But they're like, oh, these guys are different. I think there was only like 3 tribes that had like indentured servants. And they're like, oh, there you go. You're smart. You guys have indentured servants. So like, it's a weird thing to think that way. But anyhow, the gambling games were there as well. There was these gambling games. You'd put up something of yours, put up a medallion, put up earrings, put up a possession. And that was the pot. And then you play from there. So
when did building casinos start?
The casinos expansion, it was in 1994. The only reason I know that, I'm a young millennial, but I'm like, I'm older than the internet. And then basically also 1 year older than the casino.
Oh, you're born in 93?
Yeah.
So was my wife.
Yeah. Beautiful. Really?
Yeah. I didn't tell you that.
No, I thought she was a couple years older. Great year. Amazing year.
Yeah. I'm thankful for it.
Absolutely.
That year. That's really cool. I have no native friends besides you. So I'm really curious about all that. And our calls typically don't revolve around your background, although I do know some personal details, and I'm curious. I don't remember exactly what you told me about your dad, and you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but I find it pretty fascinating that you grew up without a dad, yet you appear to be very well adjusted and you're thriving in your business. So what impact did that have on you?
Definitely. I think it's an environmental thing, and being around people that you see. I might seem a little quiet, but I've been like observational, because that's why I had to be when I was young without having a father figure directly teaching me. So I said it in a bar one time, basically it takes a tribe to raise a man, and I have become a man. And now I'm like, but from those aspects of actually learning, like I'll talk about hunting. So when I was going hunting, I didn't have a dad to teach me or anything. So with my cousin and his stepdad, actually, and that was like a one-time thing. So like, you know, he took it not necessarily for granted, but he had the opportunity to go all the time. I was like, oh, this is like my one time. So I have to be very observational and take those kind of things in. And from that aspect, I just kind of learned to be very observational and try to take lessons in the first time. You quoted something in the car, like when you take in wisdom for yourself and use it, something along the lines of when you use wisdom for yourself, that's the definition of it.
The height of wisdom is to take your own advice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bar.
Man, that's so fascinating. So if you don't mind me asking, have you ever known your dad?
I do know of him. He did a prison for about 18 to 20 years.
Prison?
Yeah.
For what?
Don't want to discuss that.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think you've ever told me, even off camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about that. I don't like to talk about what I went through with my dad, but I have, and there are some guys here that have given talks that have left us all verklempt, tearing up, and I wasn't expecting that at all. But hearing people talking about hating their mom and wishing they were dead, we started talking about vulnerability at the start of the pod. It's like, that is as vulnerable as it gets when you can tell, like, I mean, he's super duper Christian, and for him to say something like that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think that's where I learned from here is that vulnerability. In that aspect, I actually related to him a lot more than you know. But yeah, I appreciate people being so open, honest, and raw about things.
Yeah, it encourages you to be vulnerable with someone when they're first vulnerable with you. You know, if you tell them about your problems, people tend to open up more. And I wish people did that more. I think they're afraid of judgment. But as I like to say, we've all got problems since everybody's going through something that you don't know anything about. Like you're saying, you connect with people that way. Like, oh, I didn't know that about you. And then you're like, me too. And then let's talk about it. And then you feel better about it. You know, it helps.
Trauma bonding.
There you go. And you being here is proof to me that you have sought out mentors in your life. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you've done that more because your father wasn't around?
Definitely. I think it makes me appreciate when somebody gives you your time and attention to be able to inflect into you and learn from those kind of things, because that's special. But yeah, mentorship has, we call it kind of business therapy for ourselves. And obviously we're talking about relationships a lot, but within that, like mentorship bound, it just helps you grow in so many aspects, opens up a hole so you can fill it and grow from it.
You want to do fun questions?
Either one, whatever works.
Well, it usually leads to good discussion.
Okay.
And we're about 2/3 of the way through. Can you believe we've been talking for almost 45 minutes?
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
All right. If you could create a new holiday that doesn't exist now, and you're wanting to celebrate a unique aspect of human nature, what would you celebrate? What would you want celebrated?
So this is interesting. So I first went to my mind was Hug Day.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, it was Hug Day.
I'm a hugger.
Yeah, but I think about like Southern hospitality on that. So you could also brand it more as a hospitality day because some people are a little anxious with a hug. But yeah, the Southern hospitality, I mean, it's the most brand and definition I've ever had in my life. Like, it's such a beautiful thing, being able to engage with people, talk with people. You have it yourself, and you're just able to talk. And like, we don't do that in the Northwest, and not as much. We're clammy people. Like, you can talk, but like, so I was on the phone with an insurance person the other day. She was from the South, you could tell. And she's like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, good. And like, went into a different sentence. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Let me trace. I know you're from the South. I know you meant actually how am I doing and want to know.
Yeah.
I'm not being rude, but like, I have to like clarify, yes. Like we just go past it. So that type of thing, when you interact with it for the first time, you're like, it's so different and it's beautiful. It's 100% beautiful.
And it's genuine.
It is.
You go to parts of Europe, Central and Eastern Europe, and you walk into a store and you're like, hey, how are you? Like, I'm interested. I want to know their life story. I mean, I don't go deep that quick, but if I just say, how are you? They're like rolling their eyes.
We're not used to the pause and actually meaning it. I know I do it. I was with my uncle down there and 20-minute conversation at the gas station. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, how are we going to get through the day? But the days just roll and it's nice.
Yeah. If you came to an LSU game with me, for example, or down to the town where I'm from and where my alma mater is, let's say we went to a tailgate before a football game, they would make sure you have a drink in your hand at all times. If you were hungry, they would make sure you had a plate of food, like of jambalaya and sausage or gumbo, depending on how cold it is outside. I've been at a girlfriend's house and sitting on the floor, and her mom will come and put two pillows behind me and say if I want to lay down. You know, it's like...
It's something else. That's something else. Like, that's so beautiful to me.
When I was a kid, I never made my own plate. Mm. And I moved from Louisiana to Houston, and I remember I was my first girlfriend there. I went over to her house and she said, did you want something to drink? And I said, oh yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. And she goes, okay. The cups are in the cabinet up there.
Why she's an ex. That's why she's an ex.
Fuck out of here with that. Making my own water. You have a girlfriend now?
Yeah.
Tell me about her.
Wonderful girl.
She's a baddie.
She's beautiful. And she's humble and she's unique in that way. She's definitely fulfilling. Yeah. Sweet lady.
So if she's beautiful and humble, then she might know she's humble. She doesn't know she's beautiful, right? If you combine those traits.
Yeah, don't tell him. It's a secret.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him. You ain't even. Don't tell him.
Yeah.
All right. So what was your holiday?
Hospitality day, but like give people a hug.
Hospitality with hugs. Do y'all greet each other on the res with hugs?
No, definitely not. Just that touch. Like the way you greeted me was beautiful. I'm thankful for that.
And I don't even remember it.
You give me one dap and then a hug.
I greet everybody that I like a lot that way.
Yeah.
So and it doesn't surprise me.
But that just being your norm, the thing that you'd even think about, we don't.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And where was I? Oh, just the in Argentina, the kiss, the double kiss. It just makes you warm, like regardless. And like I asked a person I was seeing down there for a while, like, do you do it with everybody? She's like technically you're supposed to do it with everybody in the room, like them or not. And like, you're supposed to greet people that way. So like, yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing.
In Louisiana, we greet with a kiss. In Texas, we greet with a hug. And sometimes I forget about where I am. And one time, this wasn't that long ago, I was talking to someone that I enjoyed talking to. And when I said bye, I went to give her a kiss and she grabbed my face as though I was about to make out with her and pulled my face away and looked at it like considering if, despite the fact that I'm in a happy marriage, maybe I wanted to make out with her. And I was like, I was just trying to say bye, like the French do. Like we do that in Louisiana. And she was like, she felt real stupid and I avoid talking to her now.
It's different though. It's different. Like the brand is on point down there.
Yeah. I think it was Jon Stewart of The Daily Show went down to South Carolina and he was so taken aback because he thought that they were being fake, that they were so nice to him. He was like, there's no way this is sincere.
Yeah.
But if you've never been to the South, then you don't know.
You just don't know. My story on that really got me was, I was at some chain, just a chicken house. And this lady, you know, this 55-year-old lady, the waitress, she was just so sweet on me and so genuine and like everything. She was like, you need a ride to the airport, baby? Like, I got you. Like, call me. Like, seriously, you want my number right now? I was like, no, thanks. No, thanks.
What'd she call you? Darling or
baby? Yeah, I think it was baby. Baby. Yeah. Anyways, I tipped her more than the meal. Like, and I know this is, you know, proportional with money, but like it meant like how much she was taking care of me. Like, I don't know what it cost, but I was like, you made me fall in love with you. Like, it was so beautiful.
Did you hear the story from the other night? We were having drinks and this Nicaraguan waitress was serving us and Dalbar thought she was cute. And I said, well, she'd be a lot better if she smiled. And she had come by like 4 or 5 times already. And she was standing about 10 feet away from me when I said that, but she had her back to us. And I said, you think she heard that? And Dalbar was like, don't worry about it, which means she probably heard that, but I shouldn't feel bad about it. Mm. She came back with a drink for him and she was smiling at him the whole time.
Hey, it helps. Yeah. I mean, just part of service. Like that's simple human things.
Yeah. It's almost like I wanted to tip her more because she took my advice. It's almost like, you know, it's been proven that if you get someone a gift for Christmas or something, everybody wants to try to surprise somebody. Mm. But it's been shown that if we get what we request, we're happier.
Yeah.
On average.
Give me socks.
Yeah. They might miss, right? It's hit or miss.
Yeah.
Your odds improve of their happiness. Nobody's like, oh, damn, you got me what I wanted. I wish you had surprised me with something I wanted.
I agree. I'm simple things. I like socks.
Yeah. And if they're disappointed, that becomes an X too, right?
Yeah, I actually had problems giving gifts because I have 2 sisters and I felt like I always disappointed them. And so like, I get kind of queasy with gifts. And if like, I'm all right with surprises and stuff like sometimes, but like having a direct search for something eases my like almost anxiety. I'm not gonna call it anxiety. Learned about that now. but I'm just like, tell me exactly what you want, please.
Yes. What's the best gift you ever got at Christmas from Santa?
That's so funny because it's kind of the things that like you let get away, you remember more than the best gifts. We didn't really do big gift celebrations all the time. The childhood went pretty fast for me, but I do remember asking for this RC RV car thing, like a monster truck. And I got it and it was like so expensive at the time, like $150, $200, everything you needed. And then it needed a special battery pack. And we never got the special battery pack, so I never used it. So it was like special. Like I got what I wanted. I knew it was like an expense. And I never played with it once because that battery pack thing. So I remember that one. And I know that was special, like the sentiment, especially when, you know, money's tight back then. So.
But y'all did Santa?
I mean, when you're young, yeah. But like it got cut out. Like I had 2 older sisters. So they were like.
They blew it for you.
Yeah, really early. Very early.
All right, back to fun questions. If you could switch lives with anybody for one day, let's call it on Monday, just to experience what their life is like, who would it be? And would you have sex with your wife that night?
Well, I'm not married yet, so just kidding. But I was just saying this, we were talking about music and people streaming down there. There's been a lot of music talk here. And they're like, oh, Bad Bunny's like the biggest in the world. And these people are the biggest in the world. I was like, yeah, that's cool. But like, if I could be any star in the world, I'd be a country music star. So
you're the second person to say like the lead singer of a band because of the euphoric high you'd get from having the crowd sing your song.
That too. But you're just famous forever. So my answer to that would be like George Strait or somebody like just simple, classic. He's going to be 80, 90 years old selling out concerts. And like, he hasn't written a song in 40 years. Like, rap happens fast. Everything else happens pretty fast. You have like a big wane and down, but like country music, you're famous forever.
It's funny you say he hasn't written a song in 40 years. So he was my favorite in high school, my favorite country singer. And I learned one time that he doesn't write a lot of his songs.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, he went from like an A to an A minus or an A plus to an A minus for me.
No, same thing. I don't like, it's not authentic. There's an artist I won't name, but they were saying this and I could just tell it wasn't her. And then it wasn't like authentic. Like it was supposed to be like R&B kind of a love song. And I was like, she's seeing the hole, but she's not going in the hole. Like you can tell like she's never done it.
I thought you were talking about Taylor Swift, but she doesn't do R&B.
Yeah. I think she's pretty good at writing her own stuff. Like at least most of it. I don't know.
But are you Swifty?
No.
A little bit Swifty?
No. Please don't. Please.
So
don't.
Who are you switching lives with?
George Strait.
George Strait. That's interesting because most guys want the groupies and I'm sure he has them, but they're probably not, he's probably not allowing them backstage on the tour bus. And
oh, you do it respect. And you have to do it respectfully. So you just kind of like, you know,
is there a book that's most impacted your life?
Love books. Definitely. What'd you say?
You're a bibliophile.
Bibliophile. That's a new one for me. But the one that really got me in any situation like this or living a better life for myself was the first one. Well, the very first one was The Greatest Salesman in the World, OG.
Yeah, Ogmandino.
Yeah, OG. I call him OG.
Big fan.
But the one that really got me going was The Richest Man in Babylon. And that just kind of gave me the blueprint of finance. And once I actually started listening to my own wisdom or listening to the advice I've intertook, just started to tick up in life little by little.
Had you read that before we met or no?
Yeah, 100%. Been pretty vivacious with reading for the last 8 years. I'm a book slut for sure.
What's the most awesome thing somebody's ever done for you?
They go all over the place, but I mean the gift of life. That's pretty cool.
That's a good answer.
So shout out moms, but like, you know, in memory and whatnot. This was recent, but it really impacted me. So I lost somebody recently that I was stern to my truth with and my word with. And we kind of separated before he left. And then
what happened?
Unfortunately, he committed suicide.
Was that your best friend?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
It was about a month and a half ago, 2 months. But in that fact, I was very truthful with my words. And like, I told him what I said and I meant what I said. And then I was like, you know, that's what it is. And if unfortunately he went a different path, but we were separating near the end and I was like, God, I was too hard on him or I was stupid for holding to my truth and not reaching out and doing these things and whatnot. So then my sister, who is also a very difficult person, love her so much, but she's just very headfirst into everything, a lot of big energy in her. And she loves really hard, but it's so hard that it like burns, it hurts. Like, she hurts you at the same time. And I did the same thing with her. And we, like, I just put my standard in. I was like, it's like this or you're going to be out of my life. And she turned around her life in some aspects. And I went and helped her build a bed. And she was just like, you know, like the words you said to me were harsh, but I took them to heart. And she was going down a path of addiction harshly. And she was like, you know, I'm thankful for you sticking to your standard of words and meaning it. So.
Yeah. Has she overcome her addiction?
With the hard, she's crazily amazing with that stuff. I don't know how she does it, but she still drinks, unfortunately, in that stuff. But she's done hard drugs a lot, and she just has a bounce back in her that's amazing. I don't know what the fuck it is. So as far as I know, those ones.
If you could take any activity and make it an international thing, but it, like an Olympic event, but it's something that you'd be competitive in, what would that be?
It's weird. I know it's not, I'm not trying to cop out of it, but like, I'm not necessarily trying to be competitive in anything anymore, more like a creation side. And so like, I'm not, I know that's kind of a cop out, because I used to thrive and love competition so much. Like, I highly competitive, but like, I just don't see it as that anymore. I mean, I don't really have exact answer. I seen paddleboard with a paddle, not paddleball. What am I talking
Pickleball.
About? Pickleball. I always call it paddleball. I seen that for the first time, which you talked about and introduced me to in some aspects. And I was like, wow, people are just out here just loving life, like loving and living. And so like, that's pretty cool. And then I kind of looked into like the marketing side of it. And I was like, oh, like just, you know, grassroots, organic. And then it's fun to play. And so like, I don't know, I'm going to cop out and say pickleball.
Pickleball.
Yeah. Which has already taken over the world. I've seen it in Bali. I've seen it in Philippines. I've seen it everywhere.
What's the most valuable piece of advice you've ever received?
It's really simple. It kind of goes into the places we touched earlier about growing up in a single parent home. It's just one of those things that's kind of like auditory to me. We had some like elders come into our classroom, and this was like kind of like a difficult part of my life when I was young. Like, just chaos was around me. And I just always remember people saying like, listen, like, listen, like, listen, and like, make sure you're listening. And it's just these stern old women saying that to you all the time. And like, again, I'm so thankful to be here. I'm so thankful to know you. I'm thankful for your mentorship as well. But even me like getting around in a space like this or doing things like this, like, it's pretty fucking amazing. And that's because I'm like, listen more than I've talked, or listen more than I trying to take that and go with it.
I've noticed you and Dane talk very little. It seems to me like the older folks are talking more. You notice that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Dalbor and I probably talk the most.
Yeah. But we love it. Like, you know, like, honestly, it's like kind of, you know, big dog, and it's like, go do it. Like, but we love the stories. You're full of them, and you have a, you know, great light and great energy with them. So it's like off of 3 hours of sleep. And so it's like, damn. Yes,
we are not sleeping well here. I don't know what it is. I mean, we're not partying. I don't get
it. We have not.
I think we're just energized and fired up. I mean, I've got a neck problem, but I also feel energy. In fact, we were journaling this morning, writing three different things we're grateful for. And I shared with you guys only one entry from that. And I said that I was grateful for having energy despite not sleeping much. I think I've averaged 3.5 hours a night while we're here.
No, the way you're lading things through and taking things out, telling as much stories as you are, like half of 3 hours of sleep's like, and podcasting. No, that's something different right there. So
yeah.
I think that's holding to who you are.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And I appreciate what you said about my mentorship. That means a lot.
Yeah.
Current events or world, not political, but I'm curious what you think maybe is the biggest geopolitical risk or our biggest existential threat.
I'm not going to go to the one we talk about all the time. We'll take it
on. I don't know what that is. Remind me. What is it? Oh, the cancer that is feminism. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably our biggest threat.
No, I really think that's different. I think young men are struggling, and just the balance of life is different. I didn't say the word. Just kidding. No, I'm kidding. But no, I think that's pretty crazy existential threat. And it's just honestly the times we're in, and having and fostering healthy, good relationships is more difficult to do. And I talk about this crazy talk sometimes, but I'm like, what's the point? Like, I'm not gay. So like, I'm not going to go get all these assets and live life for somebody else. The only reason I'm doing all this is to have a good woman, to raise a good family. So if other than that, what's the point of working so hard?
Okay, so your answer is if you were gay, you wouldn't be as motivated?
Fuck no. What the fuck? No. What did you do? You just, we had a weird conversation at the table. Like, you just fucking fuck around all day.
So the biggest existential risk to the world might be,
I think it's a balance between men and women.
Well, it might be gay, right? It might be homosexuality, because if everybody were gay, the world doesn't continue to exist, or at least not humanity.
I do hear your point on that, and it's very logical, but I have this weird like God thing and creator thing. I actually said it to a few guys about religion, was that like creator like always balances things. So like I talked about like Hindu, Christianity, and Islam and what they eat. So like Hindus don't eat cow. Christians pretty much eat everything, but then Islam doesn't eat pork. And like just the demand of all those things, if everyone was consuming everything all the time, and that wasn't by choice, that was just consciousness that was like, hey, you guys shouldn't eat that, or you guys should be like, and then India being a lot of vegetarian or vegan, vegetarian forward. Mm-hmm. Like if another billion people were on eating all this stuff, who knows what kind of society we'd have.
If you were invited to the Oval Office, if Donald Trump summoned you for a meeting and he asked for your best advice, what would you give him?
I think he's doing some things through policies that I really like, but I just think free market capitalism is, you know, the truth and hold that we all can benefit from if you choose to. And so I don't know exactly what kind of advice I would be like, hey, just free up the markets, you know, but like
reduce regulations, maybe.
Yeah, 100% reduce regulations. I hate fucking taxes with all with a passion. You always make fun of me when I say I hate taxes. And so, yeah. Yeah,
taxes are the goose that lays the golden egg, but nobody likes it.
They are part of it, but fuck that.
Yeah. All right. If Diddy is guilty of everything he's being accused of, what should his punishment be?
I'm so out of tune with a lot of that. I mean, I know what's going on, but like, I literally, like when people talk about it, like, shut up, like, I don't care. This man's life is his own life. He makes those choices. Power corrupts people. But to be honest, like I went back to like kind of Roman times and I read, it's one of the Stoic books, forgive me which one, but anyways, at the end, I thought it was hilarious. He was like, what's wrong with being with your stable boy? Like bringing your stable boy to your room, something like that, along those lines. And I was like, what the fuck? Like I read all this like Stoic philosophy and like he wants to capitalize with this at the end. So what I'm trying to say from that is like humans are sexual beings throughout history. We've had orgies. We have all these kind of things throughout time. I think they're just trying to, in some aspects, label somebody. But if he did it coercively and through rape, I don't even know all this. I literally don't know. I don't pay attention to that shit. But like, if it was through rape and like torture, yeah, you deserve something. But like, throw him in prison with the people that justify things like that. So like, that's all I got to say. But it's throughout time, people have been doing that.
If there's one person you wish could attend this retreat next time, who would it be?
I don't like, I kind of will give you a free market capital or libertarian answer. Like, I think the people that are coming to you and attracted to your mentorship and growth, like, are supposed to be here, are supposed to be here. So whoever comes and if they bring a good energy and, you know, vying for more, or like any of those things, I think they should come.
Who here have you most connected with or been impressed with or spent the most time talking to and gotten a lot from?
I mean, literally there's little snippets from everybody. I'm not trying to, again, give a cop out from anything, like, but everyone's being very vulnerable, emotionally raw, telling true stories. So it's been powerful from, I think everyone had something to share so far.
Cool. All right, let's do overrated, underrated.
Okay.
Brett Favre.
Rated right, yeah. I think he's rated right. Like, he's good.
Anthony Edwards.
To be determined.
Luka.
I think he's the best in the league right now.
Kyrie Irving.
I think his personality, and I know it's just overrated, underrated, but like, it's not about those things. So like, I think he's going to go underrated, but his personality doesn't allow him to be who he should be.
If we were playing Final Jeopardy and you got to choose the category, what would it be?
Columbia River Fisheries.
Columbia River Fisheries?
Yeah. Pretty specialized in that.
So you probably caught salmon more than any other fish. What would be the second most fish you've caught?
Probably crappie for sure.
Crappie?
Yeah.
And you guys went out yesterday here in Costa Rica and didn't catch a fish. How often does that happen?
I mean, that's fishing. But sometimes you don't go fishing to do that. You just go fishing to spend time in nature.
Word. Yeah. But last time you were here, you caught a... What'd you catch?
Caught 6 sailfish. And ironically, it was the same captain.
So for the show notes, I'll probably use the picture of you with the fish because that's a badass photo.
Send that back to me. I don't have it anymore.
What happened?
I dropped my phone.
You had a new phone?
Yeah. And I didn't have the... Get the 99-cent Apple thing.
Case?
No, the iCloud. I didn't do it because I was like, I have whatever, 250 whatever bytes. I was like, I don't need that shit. And then they don't save it to the cloud unless you pay for it.
You lost all your nudes?
Woof.
Oh, man. Motivation to get some mo.
Yeah, seriously.
We're going to go on a hike today at 4:30 to catch the sunset. It's called the Mirador Hike. And at the top, somebody has sprayed graffiti and it says, send nudes. So you can take a picture of that with the beautiful background and make requests when you leave here.
Send it to some Latinos for sure.
How do you want to close this thing?
Just in gratitude.
You're the man. Appreciate you coming. It's been great to meet you. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Been great.
How can people find you if they wanted to connect?
I only have a Businagram, haven't been on social media for 7-8 years. I think I'm going to continue that. So the Businagram will be Tradish Fish Co. on Insta, and we're going to get on pretty much Insta. But right now it's Tutuila Fish, which is Tutuila Fish. Order some fish online for fresh fish boxes.
Thanks, dude. ManOverseas.com, man_overseas on some of the socials. We're probably going to put this on YouTube now that it's videoed. So the cameraman's shaking his head. Oh, yeah, yeah, baby, yeah, yeah, we're going to do that. So appreciate you tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, copy the link, send it to a friend of yours, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you, folks.